you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 185 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today my guest is Matthew Trollinger. Matt is a personal injury and workers' comp attorney, solo practitioner down in Southern Maryland, not too far from where we're recording today. We discovered last night that both of us are huge Washington Nationals fans, and so scheduling a recording of this podcast episode the day after the Nats clinched a playoff spot or in the league finals might not have been the brightest idea for the two of us, but nonetheless, by the time you hear this, we will have won the World Series. So Matt, as I said, is a solo practitioner who does personal injury law. Wanted to chat with him about his experience coming from a larger personal injury firm and creating a solo practice, and how he went about that process of the trials and tribulations of doing so. So without any further delay, let's talk to Matt Trollinger. Matt Trollinger, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's so cool to have you on the show today. Matt, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. I have a practice in Southern Maryland. We're located in downtown Waldorf off of 301. And we help people that are injured at work on the plaintiff's side of workers' compensation, as well as in car crashes, primarily motor vehicle accidents on the plaintiff's side. I am a solo. I've got a couple staff members, two paralegals, one to handle the workers' comp and one to handle the personal injury side, and a receptionist. And we primarily serve St. Mary's, Charles, Calvert County, as well as Prince George's, and sometimes throughout the state of Maryland and in D.C.
Well, you're in a practice area that has a lot of competition. We'll get around to that in a minute. How did you become a solo? Were you involved in another firm, you know, before that, or did you start a solo practice straight out of the chute?
I did not start straight out. It took me actually kind of a little bit of time to get the first full-time legal job out of law school. I coached for a little bit. I coached swimming and kind of did some part-time work for a law firm in DC doing personal injury. I would go out to clients' homes and sign them up, sure, explain to them the personal injury process, and I'd get $55 every sign up plus mileage. So I did pretty well explaining the process, and I earned a full-time job there. So I was in DC for a couple years for a firm that did a lot of marketing and was one of those big-time competitors, sure, that you speak of that's, you know, spend a lot of money on advertising. I came down to Southern Maryland for a couple years doing workers' comp, and there wasn't really the partnership opportunity there. And so I went up to Upper Marlboro and Prince George's and worked for a firm there doing some PI. And then the firm split, and the plans there changed. And I said, okay, well, I've got some cases that I brought in on my own. And it was time to bump up the schedule a little bit and see what I could do to get started. So I had a talk with the firm owner, and we agreed to separate. We worked something out on the cases I had brought in and the cases that he didn't really want, because right, they were workers' comp and nobody did those. And I was able to get started about 2.5 years ago. In March will be my third year being on my own. So it's really exciting.
Good for you. So had you always had in the back of your mind the possibility of going solo? Was that something that intrigued you, or did necessity become the mother of invention?
I've been thinking about it for, I had probably been thinking about it for a couple of years before we started. I had it, my own internal clock.
Right.
I thought, okay, let me get as much experience as I can from these amazing trial attorneys that I'm working with. And if, you know, in about 5 years, the plans aren't where I want them to be, then maybe we'll look at going out on my own. And I had to bump that up about 3 years because it was the right time with the cases that I had. But I'm so glad I did.
Yeah, I don't know if there's something particularly unique to personal injury law as opposed to, say, you know, some of the other typical types of practice areas that solos engage in. But I think you see that happen pretty frequently in personal injury. People work for a firm, they get a level of expertise, you know, and let's face it, like most other practice areas, personal injury, you have a lot of bread and butter cases, and then, you know,
right,
hopefully a couple of what, you know, ones that are more significant. But the bread and butter cases, you get to a point where you start to think, I can do all of this on my own, start to finish, you know, intake to trial. And it lends itself to starting to think, I believe, that a solo practice might be in the offing.
Right. And I think what's also a motivating factor is are some of the fees that you bring in. You know, as an associate, I was fortunate with a number of the places that I've worked at where they incentivize the associates for bringing in business. And when you start to develop relationships and some of these cases settle, or you get a great result at trial, and you see that, okay, I'm getting a percentage of this because I brought it in. But you look at the whole and you say, wait a minute, I could do this on my own and maybe change a couple things as far as customer service, or change a couple things as far as overhead. And you can really visualize yourself making a life that you hadn't thought about before. And that's kind of what happened to me in between firm jobs. I had a couple cases that came in and I said, oh, wow, I could really start something here. And I delayed it. But thankfully, I had a couple other cases come in that were helpful to get started.
Yeah, and I think that's a path that a lot of folks who are practicing in personal injury go down. So you made the decision and talked to the partners and decided it's time for you to make that move. So what was your plan at the time? Were you thinking, I'm going to open a storefront, I'm going to work from the kitchen table, I'm going to hire people right away? Kind of what was your thought process at the time, and how did it actually turn out?
Right. So I was very fortunate to have a friend and a mentor of mine who I had talked to, over a period of months before I made the official move. And he offered his space in Waldorf for me to share with him for the first year to get off the ground. And it was, I mean, that's a life-changing, generous, gift.
Sure.
And he was able to not only allow me to share space with him, but we were able to share staff, which, of course, can have challenges, right?
Yeah.
But he did personal injury, and he does workers' comp. He does some criminal and domestic as well. But instead of having to train some people that were fresh and had no idea what they were doing, we just tweaked my way versus his way, which sometimes, you know, is a little difficult to do. But it was a great situation for a while. And then we started to realize that I was outgrowing the space and the kind of man hours available. And so recently, a couple months ago, after deciding we probably couldn't move together in a larger space, and being that we were completely different phases of our career, I moved out and I created a new staff and a new culture. We have one paralegal that was working for both of us who moved to South Carolina, which was one of the big pushes for me to finally move, because she's so good I didn't want to lose her. And I changed everything to keep her, to be able to work remotely for us. And it's been fantastic.
Oh, great. So you have two paralegals, one of which works remotely for you?
Yes. Yes. She works remotely for us in South Carolina. She handles all of our workers' compensation cases. And I've never had somebody who's so skilled at getting people through a difficult situation with a smile. So I knew I had to do whatever I could to keep her. So it helped us kind of modernize our systems. So we use SharePoint so that all of our files are able to be edited by anyone, whether we're here or, you know, in Baltimore or, you know, in a conference in Florida. And she can just, you know, she can print our printers from here. She's connected to the phones. She's set up with everything that we have. So it's fantastic.
And when you say us, you mean the new reconfiguration of your,
yes,
your staff. You're not meaning with your buddy that, correct, you had been working with before. Okay, cool.
Correct. Yeah, there was a moment where I said, look, would you be open? Because it was his hire previously. I said, would you be open for her to work for you remotely? We don't do that. I said, okay, well, I'm going to.
Yeah.
So we figured it out and decided let's go as paperless as we can. I hired a couple people to scan things in for a couple weeks to make sure that she had all the documents and she didn't have to worry about where things were. We changed case management programs.
What do you use now?
I use CloudLex now, and we moved from Amicus is what the old office was using. And I've used Needles when I first started. I loved that because that was more server-based. CloudLex is, you know, a web-based program, and we've got a lot of capabilities with that. We're still figuring out, but I've enjoyed it so far.
Law school didn't teach you the business of law. I know how hard you work. As you practice law, manage your firm, rainmake, making sure the bills are paid, you wear so many hats. Do you feel like you're stuck in neutral all the while, working more and more hours? Fortune 500 CEOs all have coaches. Why don't you? You've got to talk to my friends at lawcoaching.com. Lawcoaching.com has coached solo and small firm and medium-sized firms like yours to huge growths. Head coach Anthony Garacci coached his firm to 490% growth over 5 years. And he can do it for you. Are you tired of trying to find great associates to do your work? Do you want more freedom to grow your firm? You got to talk with Anthony Garacci and Law Coaching at 855-455-0050. It's 855-455-0050. You deserve to invest in yourself and take your firm to exceptional results. Visit them online at lawcoaching.com or call them now at 855-455-0050.
So what has been the biggest challenge for you?
The biggest challenge, I think, is that's a couple different things. Number one is kind of creating a culture that fits with your message and your brand. I did not think that hiring a paralegal or hiring a receptionist would be as difficult as it's been. There are a lot of great people out there, but that doesn't mean they fit. You know, being in a suburb of DC, there are a lot of folks that drive into DC and make DC money, but the expectations are off, or maybe they've been burned out by a bigger firm and they don't have that empathy or compassion that you're looking for. So it's hard to find, you know, the skill that you're looking for with the, you know, the intangibles. And you try to hire hungry, humble, and smart, but sometimes you think a great candidate is there. And then, you know, I met with a client yesterday who was talking about another firm's staff that was just so mean to him and so awful. And I said, well, who was that? Because I had interviewed someone from that firm and I had offered them, you know, a position. And he said the person's name. And I thought, oh my gosh, I could have just hired somebody that would run up half of my clients out the door. And I wouldn't have even known. Yeah, it was a real blessing that didn't happen that way. But, you know, establishing a culture was way more difficult than I had even thought of. So I probably didn't consider it.
How do you divide the responsibilities between yourselves and your paralegals? Is there a bright line as to what they do on behalf of a case versus what you do? Or is that a kind of a blurred area?
I think it flows back and forth a little bit. We have, when a client comes in and they're scheduled, I want to make sure that an attorney is meeting with them to explain the process. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that we can do as a small firm and be able to manage a little bit better than some of the bigger firms. But from there, paralegal does a lot of the updates, does a lot of the paperwork. Certainly, we're doing trial prep as an attorney. We're going to the trials, but there are clear roles, but they flow back and forth. I try to do what I can to check in with the clients, you know, every so often, every couple weeks or so, just to make sure they understand that things are going well from the attorney side. But, you know, we try to delegate as much as we can.
Yeah, it gets to be a challenge too, because, you know, clients, they either need to be pre-framed as to what to expect, or else you know, you have to manage their expectations in terms of how much attorney time they're going to get. And for data intensive practice areas like personal injury, they're, at least in the beginning, in the data collection and medical records and lost wages information and treatments and all of that, pretty much the only person they're going to be seeing at that, during that period of time, you know, is the person who's collecting that stuff. And most often that's a paralegal. And that can, right. That goes to your issue of culture. As long as you've got that strong culture and the great personalities servicing your clients, you're not going to have an issue. But if you have that one bad hire that you managed to dodge, it makes all the difference in the world.
Right. I think for us, for me, and I've been fortunate to kind of have been raised this way in the different firms that I've practiced in so far, is that at that intake, you know, when the client comes in, that is your best chance as an attorney to establish rapport with that client. Because I know in my mind, I'm probably not going to speak to them for a little while unless something's wrong. Because if something goes, if it's going well, then, you know, they're getting their medical care. We're taking care of the PIP. We're taking care of property damage. But that's on the paralegal. And once they're done treatment, typically the next time I talk to them is either with an offer or a discussion about filing suit. That could be 6 months down the road or 4 or 5. And, you know, we have to have a bond in the beginning to get us through, that I have enough, you know, emotional and intellectual credibility in that bank to draw from as that stage goes on.
For sure. For sure. So, you know, it's a competitive market. As you said, you worked with a firm that's, you know, in the district, really big marketing budget. When you think of personal injury attorneys, you think of some of these folks who are out there really beating the bushes through the media and other venues. How does a solo compete with in that market?
It's not easy, but there are some things that I thought I didn't expect to be as helpful. So one way that our clients typically find us is through Google reviews. We've been able to catapult ourselves a little bit ahead of some of our local kind of older firm competitors because they just haven't paid attention to it. Yeah. Somehow in 2019, it's just not part of what they do. When they hand a client a check, they're not saying, "Hey, if you're happy about how we've communicated with you, if you're happy about us respecting you and your injuries, then take 5 minutes and do a Google review." And it's so easy now. You probably are familiar with Bird Eye.
Sure.
I mean, this program, you know, it sends them a text, and they can just click it on their phone and do a Google review in 30 seconds. So knowing that about 10 to 20% of people who say they're going to do a review actually do one, and being intentional about it, has helped us a lot. Facebook, you know, targeted posts and targeted marketing has been helpful. I've reconnected, you know, with some old friends and gotten some really fantastic cases because it jogged their memory. Oh yeah, Matt's able to help out with something like this. And then they refer a friend, and it's one of those things that's been really helpful. But we also try to do the old school way too, and go to other attorneys in the area and say, thanks for referring us a case that you've got a conflict. Here's some donuts. Right.
Yeah.
And just establishing that every other month or so in person. We try to mix the two, but you can definitely make it as a solo if you're intentional.
Yeah,
there's plenty of cases out there.
Yeah, the unfortunate part is there's no shortage of folks who have had the unfortunate circumstance of being caught involved in a motor vehicle accident, and it's not their fault.
Right.
It's just, and that's not going to go away, I don't think. Even with the self-driving technology that's coming on board.
Well, but, and to Neil, yeah. the thing that is, I think, for us as solos and small firms that really sets us apart is if we're getting real people to review us, you know, on Facebook or Google, there are a lot of people out there that are not getting phone calls back from their attorneys or their staff, or that, you know, some of the bigger folks are so overwhelmed that it really stands apart. And that someone says, hey, they called me back. It's something so simple. I mean, it goes a long way. Most of my clients call us and say, hey, I read those, and that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the thing that a solo can do, that provide that really good client support. And in contrast to some of these big firms, and it only stands to reason that if you're a firm and you're handling 1,000 cases a month, it unless you've got some really great systems in place and some really great people in place, it's hard to have the same kind of personal relationship with the client as a solo can with a smaller staff. And so it does create that culture and that referral sense.
You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur.
So just going back for a second, you use BirdEye. Is that a web-based platform that you can use to solicit reviews?
It is. So you can create campaigns. You can have a pre-populated text message or email, and it has your your brand, your logo on it. And you can say, hey, thanks a lot for letting us represent you on your case, whatever you want it to be. And you put in the cell phone, you put in the email address, and it will send it out. And sometimes we do it when the client's in here while they're waiting for some of the paperwork to get copied. We say, hey, you're going to have a text message in a couple of minutes. Would you just take a look at it? And they can just click it on their phone, type it out, and it'll post. And, you know, depending on what time of day that might come through, someone might not be able to get to it, but there's built within it a reminder schedule that you can set up, you know, within, you know, 5 hours or 2 days, and then you can leave them alone after that. But if it also helps too, I haven't had this happen, but if it's a really bad review, it will notify you so that you can tell, you can try to smooth it out with them, I think, before it goes live, which is helpful too.
Yeah. There's a couple of other products that do something similar. We had an advertiser here on the podcast, Podium.com, which is really great. They have the same kind of paradigm that works through text messaging exclusively. So that's kind of interesting, because more and more clients, particularly younger clients, that's the only way they communicate, even with their attorney. So that's an interesting kind of viewpoint. I personally use GatherUp, which used to be called Get Five Stars. And one of the things I like about GatherUp, and again, I don't have any financial relationship with them, it's just, it's what I use. One of the things I like about GatherUp is that the reviews can be posted in multiple places. They can go on your Google reviews, they can go on Facebook reviews, they can go on LinkedIn, they can go on your website. You can include a widget on your website that scrolls through these reviews. And so there are a lot of features.
That is really nice. BirdEye does that too, but I try to focus them on. I think I can only do it one at a time. Is GatherUp, is it able to do them on multiple at the same time?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So anyway, tell us a little bit. You briefly mentioned Facebook there. What role, if any, does social media play for you?
So it plays a big role in communicating our message and letting our clients know what we're doing outside of just practicing law. It helps us stay, I think, on top of mind in our normal relationships as well. So we had an event that we sponsored this summer, which was we have a baseball team down here, a little baseball team, Southern Maryland Blue Crabs. So we sponsored a first responders night, and we were able to post all the photos and target a boost post of that. And it kind of worked together with what our website was doing and with some of the other things that we were doing at the same time. Sure. So that, it's never really something singular, right? It's a bunch of different hits. But I've noticed some of our current clients have found the post that are first responders, which is great to see. And they're sharing it and they're liking it. And it's made a big impact. It's really helpful.
That's wonderful. I'm just taking a quick look here. I would encourage our listeners who are doing something similar to that to go back and listen to our episode with Christina Davies, who was all about getting PR for your events such as that, you know, the ones that you are doing. That was episode 149. And Christina wrote a book called PR for Anyone. So one of the great things of doing something like you're doing with a first responders night at the local minor league baseball team, you want to make sure that good work, I mean, you're not doing it just, I mean, you're doing it because you want to, it's the right thing to do and you have a passion for that. But by the same token, you want to make sure that you get the visibility for doing that. Social media is one aspect of it, but also public relations in media and the like is a really useful tool for amplifying those results. So go back and listen to episode 149 with Christina Davies, and I think you'll get a little insight into how that might benefit you.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, listen, Matt, this has been wonderful. It sounds like things are going well down there in Waldorf. Tell our audience a little bit about how they may reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you've said today, or if you want to point them in the right direction.
Sure. If anyone wants to stop by, absolutely. We're right downtown in Waldorf. You can email me, Matt, M-A-T-T, at trollingerlaw.com. And we'd be happy to talk to you about the systems that we have in place. Or if you're thinking about going solo, I had a friend from law school that I hadn't seen for about 10 years. She showed up yesterday and we talked about some of the things that she wanted to pursue. I'm happy to do that anytime.
Great. And just real quick, I mean, your website is trollingerlaw.com. Did you do your own website or did you have some help with that?
I did have some help.
It's really a very clean, very well structured website. So,
yes. So this year, besides changing offices, hiring a bunch of new staff, changing case management systems, I decided to get some crisp videos done and overhaul the website to make it a little bit more modern and, like you said, clean. We had another one that was good, but it was a little bit hard to follow on the ice. So I had some help. Consult Webs did our website, and I'm happy with it so far.
Yeah, well, the video, crisp video. I mean, I can spot a crisp video a mile away. I'm a crisp video client as well. Mike Mogul down there in Atlanta just does some phenomenal work, and it's really evident in your video. It's one of the reasons I wanted to mention your website, so that people go look at your video and see, you know, how useful something like that can be.
Thank you. Yeah, I was really happy with the client testimonials that they were able to interview the clients. Yeah. And really, you know, our clients were able to share some things that I didn't know about their struggle through the process and how we helped them. So it was really fun to do that.
Michael just finished his summit in Atlanta this past weekend, where he gave away a Ferrari.
Yeah. That was crazy. I got close to it. I took a picture.
Did you go?
I did go. I took a picture. I didn't think I was going to win, but I wanted to show my son when I got home.
Well, I went not this one, but the one previous where he gave away 3 Teslas, and I did the same thing. I took my picture with the Tesla. I did not win.
So. Yeah, it was a great summit. I'm already registered for next year because they're going to have Malcolm Gladwell and John Maxwell there. So it sounds like it's going to be great.
Yeah. So again, for our listeners, we don't have any relationship with Crisp other than we are very satisfied clients of theirs. If you want to learn more about Crisp Video and in particular their CEO, Michael Mogul, go to our episode 121. And again, we'll have all that in the show notes and you can look that up and hear all about the value of using video on your website. So, all right, Matt, I'm going to let you get back to work. Thanks ever so much for spending some time with me today here on The Law Entrepreneur.
Sure. Thank you, Neil.
Well, that will do it for today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors for making this show possible, the good folks at Call Ruby Receptionists, Jurisdiction, the providers of the Next Level Law Practice Program, and our newest sponsor, lawcoaching.com. So take a moment to visit our show notes and hop on over to their websites for special discounts and savings and other free stuff that you can get, and just support them because they make this podcast possible day in and day out. Also, if you got a couple minutes, pop on over to our own website, thelawentrepreneur.com. We have a couple little articles there. You can also listen to the podcast itself there if you choose to. And sign up for our newsletter or our mailing list. And we don't do a lot. You know, you're not going to bombard you with emails every week. And I do plan on doing a few more this year, but we'd love to have you join our community. And in that sense, you can also go on to our Facebook page. You can find us just by searching on The Law Entrepreneur. You can find out what we got going on a daily basis, sometimes hourly, on the Facebook page. So I'd love to have you join us there. And if you have the time, last but not least, go on over to iTunes, search on The Law Entrepreneur. And if it's something that you believe in and feel strongly about, we'd love for you to leave an honest 5-star review, as well as comments about what you like and dislike about the show, because it does mean a lot to us that you are our community, our listeners, and I want to thank you for making this all possible. So we'll see you next time on The Law Entrepreneur.